Hello, respected viewers. Come on, check out the t-shirt, okay? Never underestimate old guy on a bike. Who is the old guy? I don't know. Definitely not me. Though I do have a bike. But back to the topic in hand. Here we are, just a month on from Ukraine's incursion to Kursk Oblast, which is Russian sovereign territory. So Ukraine's attempt to turn the tables and give the Ruskies a taste of their own medicine, see what it feels like to have your homeland invaded. So it was a success, a failure. Well, it all depends on what the aim was. And there could be several aims, but Kyiv has deliberately not disclosed an aim, because then whatever it achieves, if anything, they can say, well, that was the aim, so it was crowned with success. So was it to have territory to trade, say, we'll exchange it, we'll give you this back, you give us some of our land back? Was it to compel Russia to withdraw forces from East Ukraine to try and contain the Russian advance? Was it just to capture prisoners, just to inflict other casualties? Was it to turn the flank of the Russian forces in East Ukraine by coming around to attack them from the north to cut off their supply lines? Could be any of these things, all of these things. Presumably, you'd rank them in order of priority. Well, if it was to stop the Russian advance towards Pokrovsk in particular, it has failed, because Russia is still moving forward, albeit slowly, albeit, you know, taking several hundred casualties a day. No, a casualty doesn't have to mean a death. It can mean the person's wounded, and it can, or can mean the person is taken prisoner, or rarely goes missing. And another point is desertions are up significantly in the Russian army this year. It's still probably under 1% of the Russian army has deserted this year. But, you know, obviously in peacetime, it would be, you know, infinitesimally small. Even the first year of the war, more like 0.1% of the army went absent without leave and or deserted. I think the difference is desertion is thought to be with intention of permanently staying with the army. Absent without leave could just be overstaying your leave even by an hour. But they assume the person did intend to return to his or her unit in the end. Should be his, mostly because, you know, the Russian army is like 96% male. Is one of the few armies in the world to have be very, very few, have very, very few women, be very overwhelmingly male. Anyway, I digress. So back to the topic. They certainly haven't turned the flank on the of the Russians. They've done very little to cut off supplies, a bit to the Kharkiv sector, where the Russians aren't really moving forward anyway. Another possible objective was to create a buffer zone to keep Kharkiv, the second biggest city, out of range of Russian artillery, which they succeeded with missiles and rockets. You can't really do that, because some of them have got a range of hundreds of kilometers. To take prisoners, okay, they've taken several hundred, so to be exchanged for Ukrainians later on, quite easy to do. Some of these were border guards, and people have been rushed through basic training, conscripts, did not sign contracts, therefore weren't supposed to be sent to Ukraine. Now, Russia has sent conscripts to Ukraine, but not that many. Of the roughly 500,000 Russian soldiers fighting in Ukraine, is probably in the tens of thousands of conscripts, which is still a major breach of Russian law. But nevertheless, Russia does try not to send too many of them. Putin is seems to be actually genuinely embarrassed about that. Now, perhaps there's a distinction of the difference, because often they're strong-armed, these conscripts, into signing contracts, agreeing to be soldiers. And then there's no demobilization day. Demobilization day is often death. It's not you're going to be, you know, like the Americans in Vietnam, DROS, state eligible for return from overseas. After the 1 year, they could go home. And so the Russians don't have that. Remember, the Viet Cong and Vietnam said that DROS was stupid, because just when the Americans had learned the country, learned how to fight, they went home. They'd done their tour of duty. They could volunteer for subsequent tours, but they seldom did. So the Ukrainians, they've not turned a flank. They've not cut off supplies significantly to the Donbass region, maybe slightly to the Kharkiv Oblast for the Russians. The buffer zone, slightly. And they've not made Russia stop advancing towards Pokrovsk. And yes, Russia has withdrawn, well, at least several thousand troops from East Ukraine, where they've got something like 500,000. But it's not significant. It's not really slowing down the tempo of the war there. And the Ukrainians haven't pressed their advantage to really spread out to take Belgorod or threaten it or envelop it or something like that, or even take Kursk. So then they said so quite quick advance in the first 2 weeks of August, but then they've slowed and they've done nothing, and they've allowed Russia to bring in forces and contain them. And the opportunity's gone now. You know, Kursk might have been takeable. Belgorod maybe was vulnerable, but it's not anymore because they've rushed in reinforcements. But perhaps that was never their intention. They realized they'd be overstretching themselves. That would be too risky. Now, Russia claims to have inflicted over 10,000 casualties on the Ukrainian incursionists, which is preposterous. So according to all these Russian official communiques, they destroyed the Ukrainian army several times over. Now, admittedly, Ukrainian official statements about the war, you've got to take those with a pinch of salt. I'm bored to the back teeth, fed up to the back teeth, bored rigid with quoting the father of war correspondents, William Howard Russell, that the truth is the first casualty of war. So they will inflate these figures, just like but just like Churchill saying in the Second World War that German was it warships or submarines were sunk both by the Royal Navy and by himself. The trouble is he sunk them at double the rate the Royal Navy did because he was announcing these figures which were lies. So they always do that, but you should try not to lie too much, otherwise you lose all credibility. But obviously the Russian government lost that decades ago, centuries ago, maybe. In a way, as I said, they've been surprisingly honest about the Kursk incursion. So I think there have been some successes for the Ukrainians, but it's not been the triumph that some people thought it might be, that I thought it might be, indeed hoped it might be. Has it fundamentally changed the course of the war? No. It gave them a fillip to their morale temporarily. Was it worth doing? I think so. The loss of the Ukrainians have been slight, but perhaps Zelensky has been unwise, and some of his critics will say this, in diverting scarce resources from the main effort. The crucial thing is to defend Pokrovsk. I think the Russians are going to take Pokrovsk. It's almost inevitable. It's a matter of time. If they take it this month, that's a big failure for Zelensky. But the longer he can keep it, the better. If he could keep it till Christmas, that'd be quite a big success. Because if it falls even then, time for the Ukrainians to build more lines of defenses behind that, to have made the Russians pay a very high price, several hundred casualties a day for that, and time for maybe even to construct other roads, even sort of untarmacked roads, because there's so many trucks have to go down these various roads to supply troops to the front with munitions, rations and everything else, to get reinforcements in, to get wounded men out, and they're just not going to be able to do it unless they have roads, because they're not enough off-road vehicles. Yes, they have them, but it's an insufficient number, because there are tons of munitions and tons of rations and so forth, and I really do mean tons, each day have to be delivered. If you're keeping hundreds of thousands of troops in the field in this campaign, you think the rate that they expend their munitions. But there's been some good news to the Ukrainians about the short-range missiles that the United Kingdom is dispatching there. So John Healey's the British Defence Secretary, he said that it's going to be worth £162 million, lightweight multi-role missiles, 650 of them, multi-role as in they can do various different things against personnel and so on. But they have a rather short range, only 6 kilometres. So the UK is going to be spending £3 billion a year on the Ukrainian military for as many years as it takes. But that's only like about 5% of the UK's defense budget. The US is by far the biggest supplier. But Ukraine has been paying a high price. Putin was somewhat lashing out in rage, that Poltava attack, murdering dozens of civilians. And I say that advisedly, murdering, killing civilians, because yes, civilians get killed in war, and no, it's not always murder. If it was part of a legitimate military attack on a proper military target, such as an army base, a navy base, an air force base, or whatever, a military unit, and some civilians who happened to be beside it got killed, yes, that's terrible, but the aim was not to kill civilians, even if the attacker accepted that civilians were inevitably going to be killed. But if you hit a civilian target purposefully, intending to kill civilians, well, that's different. That's murder. It's not a legitimate military target. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Thank you for the donation on PayPal the other day. And thank you, people who approached me about lessons online. You shall have them. Goodbye.